So, Oka and I and a student of mine, Dave Bursick, have been running magneto convection simulations on the solar surface. And I'll tell you, I want to show you a little bit of our results and get some of your comments. And it was a great excuse to learn how to do PowerPoint. And so the main question, this is all inspired by Fausto's paper from a couple of years ago, actually, was we wanted to look at whether there was a surface dynamo on the sun. And I give the punchline away at the beginning. And that is that there's a small-scale dynamo, but it's a global one. And I'll explain what I mean.
Yeah. It's intriguing.
So what we do is that we start from a snapshot of non-magnetic convection that's been relaxed for a long time. And for what I'm going to show you today, what we did was we imposed a uniform one Gauss horizontal C field. The top boundary is the magnetic field goes to a potential field, and the bottom boundary, the inflow is advect in horizontal one Gauss field, and the outflows just do whatever they want. We're also running a case now where instead of one Gauss field, we've imposed a 30 Gauss uniform horizontal field, because we don't really know what the seed field is like on the sun, so our feeling was that those two values would probably bracket what's going on.
Yeah, well, Brian, do you assume a net flux through the sides of your calculation number?
Through the side?
Horizontal?
No.
Horizontal.
Whatever going in one, well, I don't know what you mean. Whatever's going in one side is coming out the other if it's a horizontal field.
Is there a net flux through?
Yeah, then the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I want to know.
So, what do you need to have a dynamo? Well, you need to have something that's going to amplify the field by stretching and twisting it. You need to have some diffusion so that you can reconnect the field lines and change the magnetic topology. And you need to have a circulation process that's going to make the stuff cycle through this time and time again. So this is, we've now actually run this for about 90 solar minutes, but this is the first 80 minutes of the run. And the peak fields typically...
What does minute mean?
What?
What is a physical unit?
Minutes.
Okay, what is a mathematical unit?
I don't know what you mean by mathematical units.
It's a turnover over time, something...
Turnover time or something.
Minutes doesn't tell me anything.
Well, for instance, the time scale for granulation on the sun is of the order of 10 minutes.
Oh, you use actual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The turnover time is somewhere of the order of, for this box, which is goes 2.5 millimeters below the surface, is somewhere a little bit less than an hour. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask Sasha's question regarding the magnetic field? Well,
yeah.
Like, what is it? Kind of mathematical things. Like,
what do you mean?
Gauss is terrible. Like, I don't know, kinetic energy.
Oh, this is way below the kinetic energy density.
Are we going sort of like, are you like 400 Gauss good estimate for?
500 Gauss is a good estimate for the EP partition field. So this is way below that.
Paul, you said you got inflows, which are bringing in magnetic field.
Yeah.
So if you plot it on here, what the magnetic field would be just accumulated from the inflows, where would it be? Yeah.
Oh, much less than that.
Would it be that line?
What?
Would it be that line?
No. It would be very small.
How small?
Because in fact, although you're bringing in field, you're taking out more field than you're bringing in. Field both comes in and out.
Sure.
And
that's the RMS V.
That's the RMS, yeah. So the RMS is about 5% of the field.
Is this the field at the surface?
This is the field at the surface, actually at tau equal 1. We've calculated the optimal
depth. Not
the
volume average.
No, this is
the RMS.
This is the RMS at tau equal 1 and the field at tau equal 1. The field below the surface is somewhat stronger than that proposed field. This is at the surface.
Oh.
But then there are these observational limits, like the Doppler brought the Zeeman broadening and the Hanley effect.
Yeah.
Which tell you that it should be, well, it's just like 10 or 20 Gauss.
That what should be?
The fat density in the quarter scale. There are these observations by Stavro and Robert Shaw.
I mean, this is a very intermittent field. I mean, I will show you. What? This is not a horizontal plane because it's an Italian one, but it's RMS over that surface.
B max. Okay, so B max is 100 Gauss. Oh, okay.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, do you know we'll have a plot of what the rate of accumulation of blobs of magnetic field? Because without that, we can't really tell what's been happening. Right?
No, in this model, you can't tell anything. So,
I know something about what the what the rate of work is.
I mean, you're either sticking in or taking away magnetic field from this stuff at some rate, right? So, I mean, that thing doesn't mean much to me unless I know how much you're adding or how much you're doing.
Okay. All I was telling you is that the pointing flux is out of the volume.
Okay. So you're taking it away.
So we're taking it away.
But to start with, you must not have been taking it away. To start with, you must have been putting it in, right?
To start with,
now you're taking it away, but what, I mean, how does this rate vary?
Well, this, didn't he specify the criteria? The inflow of material carries one Gauss.
Yeah, how much is inflow and how much is outflow?
But what comes out of the calculation?
Yeah, what is it?
It's very small, that's the point. So the big thing is really the generation by work against the Lorentz force. That's a major contribution to generating anything.
Well, yeah, but you're saying this, I have no proof of this.
We look at the energy balance, okay? You have work that's being done against the Lorentz force, and you have dissipation. They're almost the same. But there's a slight net positive balance, and there's a little bit more work being done than is being dissipated. And that's going into building up the field, and also some of that is going into the pointing flux, which is at the bottom of the box.
Carry on.
So this is a snapshot from a time that's about 56 minutes after we've begun. And the scale is in Gauss. Where it's gray, that's where the field, this is again surface field, that's where the field is less than 5 Gauss.
What was the initial field?
1 Gauss.
I mean, distributed uniformly?
Yes, uniform horizontal.
And then you collapse into this.
Okay. Where it's black and white is where the field is greater than 50 Gauss. And since I couldn't get this movie to play properly.
What do you plot?
That
amplitude, what's plotting?
The magnetic field strength. Okay, so this is a movie that we've made of the field.
So this is BZ, is that what we're saying?
This is BZ, yes.
And the thing is a Gauss that they have, mm-hmm. So minus 40 to 40 Gauss?
Yeah. No, plus or minus 50 Gauss is in color. Black and white is what's over 50 Gauss. So for instance, over here
is a memory of polarity.
What?
Polarity.
What do you mean polarity?
You started with sort of field which was negative.
We started with field that was horizontal.
Yeah.
So there's no net vertical flux here.
Oh, you're putting vertical.
But I think, Alexander, means perhaps that you would see a preferred direction of bipolar regions.
What do you mean a preferred direction?
It's a very weak theory.
Oh, yes, right.
And of course, you want to know whether it goes from the left to the right or from the right to the left.
Oh, it goes from the left to the right.
Okay, more blue on the left and more red on the right.
And just to clarify, well, this is compressible, is there a rotation in this thing?
No rotation, but it is compressible.
Is there a stable layer above or below?
There's a stable layer above, and there's a transmitting boundary below. So there's a half millimeter force here above goes up to the temperature normal, which is, I guess, about 3 scale heights or so above.
But my question is actually scientific.
Yeah.
What happened to your mean field? Yeah. Dead or continue to be because
it gets mushed
up. Felicity.
It gets mushed up by the convection.
But do you calculate mean field continuously to follow it in time, or it just stays constant as?
The initial field is changed. There's no longer a uniform
the
field.
Mean field.
But does it preserve that?
The question is whether the flux in the faces changes or not.
Is there a net flux? Is there a net flux?
Oh, I haven't actually looked at that, but I expect that the flux of the faces doesn't. It is periodic.
That's the thing about
so, so that flux can leave or enter.
Hang on. The flux through the end walls, and if you had boundary conditions which said dBx was actually chosen by dz is equal to zero, then the flux of whatever you put in would have to be preserved.
Yeah, but it's not
doesn't have that.
That's what I'm saying. But you have these in and out flow things.
Right.
So
no,
does it lose flux or does it gain flux or what?
We can measure it. I haven't done that.
And what's the size of this square in mathematical units? Like
this square is 6 megameters on a side. This square is 6 megameters on a side. So here you have a case where there's a little bipole that's coming up through the surface, and over here, there's a case where you have opposite polarity flux coming together, and it's going to disappear.
So the cells are like big granules.
Well, that's probably about the size of a granule.
You have the velocity field.
What?
You have a movie of the velocity.
I don't have a movie of the velocity. I can easily make that.
It's supposed to be sort of convection, right?
It is convecting.
You guys know too much, you know. Any question looks stupid.
No, it's not stupid. This is convection that's going on since the magnetic field is always quite weak compared to the dynamics. It doesn't have a significant effect on the convection. So this is the distribution over a fairly short period of time of the change in flux.
What does that, I don't understand, yeah. What does that fraction mean?
It's not a probability distribution function because it isn't normalized to have an area of one, okay? So
it's a histogram.
It's a histogram.
Oh, it's a histogram. Histogram of
defined t, the change in magnetic flux with time.
That's already sort of esoteric concept.
And this is the unsigned flux. So
yes. Sort
of, without regard to positive and negative.
Right. The change in positive and negative is about the same.
I mean,
at that
total sort of flux.
Yeah. Yeah.
Changing at that, right? This is over the volume of the...
No, just the surface.
The tau equals one surface.
Tau equals one surface.
Is it the tau equals one surface?
Yes, the tau equals one surface.
How do you generate this histogram by using different realizations of what?
I looked at the sequence of snapshots and looked to see how the flux was changing from one to the next.
Time.
So your realizations at the time. Times, yeah.
So each time you measure the BZ modulus over the box and give an entry to the
So it's not flux exactly because you don't take area into account.
Yeah, I took area into account.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. It's flux.
But this is in the growth phase or after equilibration? Because after equilibration it should be zero, right?
No, this is unsigned
flux.
This is unsigned flux.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, you, after equilibration, you should have a constant value of flux.
Oh, I don't know that this has yet reached an equilibrium state. No. This was during the...
But if it has not reached it, then the time averaging is kind of mixing.
Yeah, does the flux never decrease?
The flux does decrease.
But there's no negative quantities on the left-hand side. I mean, on the bottom axis.
During this stretch, the flux was increasing.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be fair to plot sine. It would be better to see the balance. Then we can see the balance.
Okay. No, there are places where the flux is decreasing and places where the flux is increasing.
But overall, it never overall decreased, even once.
That we don't know.
For one time step.
That we don't know before he plots sine.
But here I took the unsigned flux.
That's what the question by
the unsigned flux can go up or down, and d5 dt would be positive or negative.
I'll have to go back and look at the journal file of exactly what I did. I don't recall. There were places where the flux was decreasing and places where the flux was increasing. But I don't know about the net
unsigned flux.
Right. I'll go back and check and see just what I did. And this is the distribution of the vertical component of the field.
All right.
Which is
somewhat
similar to what you
have. Okay. So this is
Is that
affinity
particular functional form?
Wait a minute. It doesn't.
I think it's like Faustian stretch exponential.
It doesn't look like Catania at all.
It does so. It looks right.
Because their distribution is skewed.
Not
yours is symmetric.
Theirs is only skewed when they put in a vertical background field.
Yeah. If you have a mean field, it's not. It's
when we have a vertical background field, it's skewed also.
Oh, you have horizontal field.
This is horizontal. And this is a view from the top of one snapshot of what the magnetic field strength looks like. And this is of the same snapshot from the side.
No, before you take off. And this big, this one. Where's the tau equal one?
Ah.
More or less, I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
Just to give us some feeling for us.
Tau 1 is about over here.
Okay.
So he's the surface.
Yeah, that would be the visible surface.
So the other
surface.
Peakies are about there.
But what is above the surface? One
a
guy,
photosphere.
No, one guy went
so
still on this declining atmosphere. Within Tau 1, you have the atmosphere, right?
It's stable.
Yes.
So it's not supposed to be any dynamics. It's just floating up.
There's dynamics because the convection penetrates into the photosphere.
Oh, because it's over.
Yeah.
So you
but the velocity amplitude decreases as you go higher up into the photosphere.
So these leaked flux tubes are produced by some kind of flux expulsion.
Well, if you go back here, this pattern actually, when we look at it more carefully, which we've done, where you see this flux is around the boundary of an underlying mesogranule. That is, if you look at the scale size towards the bottom of the box, it gets the scale size of these things gets bigger as we go down. And what we find is that the flux at the surface accumulates over the underlying boundary of the mesogranule because the downflows at the bottom are around the boundary of the mesogranule, and so and because of the diverging nature of the upflows, it sweeps the magnetic field to the downflow boundaries at all the different heights.
Where is it down? It's bottom of convection zone?
Or is it from the top?
This is looking down from the top.
Oh, from the top.
What is the aspect ratio of your box?
2:1.
2x2x1.
2x2x1.
So how many granules can you fit in here?
Yeah, the one with the temperature. Do you have the temperature fluctuations you see it's very
light? I can show you that.
Yeah.
Actually,
well, no, that could be a mesogranule.
That's a mesogranule. That's a mesogranule, what you're seeing here.
But your picture is dominated by yellow color. Means
red is the strongest field, and yellow is weaker, and green is weaker, and blue is weaker still.
Are these disorganized fields, or is there a sense that there's a monofield threading them, or what?
Oh, let me show you. That's the magnetic field lines for that same snapshot. And the boxes at the bottom are 1x1 megameter boxes.
So there actually, it looks like there is a sort of continuous component.
Yeah, you can follow some of the field lines.
Messy.
Very messy, yes. So what look like little flux tubes can be very messy.
Come on, Mom, get us a temperature picture.
Yes, okay, that's what I got to get out of here.
Don't get distracted.
There is an option when you open new window, the previous is closed automatically.
Yeah, well,
you can put it in preferences. Okay. It'll save you a lot of time.
Just don't remember what the figure was called, so I don't know.
Well, temperature growth.
Entropy rate work.
Why don't you search for temperature?
Because that's not what it's called.
It's not what it's called. No, it's a heat gradient.
This is a velocity one, which will do the same kind of thing. So this is at the surface. This is at the surface. This is down deep, and the boxes have been doubled in each direction, so you can see the pattern better.
Yeah. Cheap trick. Bigger computer than you have.
Okay.
Those are granules.
These are granules, and these are mesogranules.
Which are mesogranules?
The ones on the right.
These are mesogranules. That's on the right. This is at the surface, and these are granules.
No.
The yellow and red is downflows, the green and blue is upflows.
Well, I'm very surprised. We studied particular clustering granules into mesogranules. They don't give such excellent regular pattern.
What do you mean?
On the sun.
Right. But that's just the same pattern repeated four times.
Oh, he repeated.
It's repeated. Right, so the actual box is like this. This is solid.
There's about one, the long mesogranule.
There's one mesogranule per box, because the box is only 6 megameters, and the mesogranule would actually like to be a little bit bigger, so they're confined by the size of the box. But there's a number of granules in the box.
If you can't find temperature, you can show entropy.
I can show you entropy. This is a temperature and velocity vertical slice along one of the planes. And so you can see that there's a granule there, and a granule there, and another granule here, and another granule there. So, why do I say that there's no surface dynamo? And the first thing is that there's very little local recirculation. And that's one of the things that I wanted to show here, that there's some local recirculation, but basically most of the stuff that starts down, here's one of the big downflows. And it's got this funny, the color is the temperature, but with the fluctuations accentuated. And basically what's happening here is that it's sort of a corkscrewy kind of thing, so that it's going in and out of the plane. Here's the head of one of the downflows, you know, one of those sort of mushroomy cap kinds of things. And you can see that here you have the mesogranule basically, but as you go up, it gets broken up into smaller patches. And here's a case where there's clearly some recirculation right at the surface. The surface is over here at this level, but you don't have very much of that.
Sorry, but can I just clarify, by no surface dynamo, you mean you're not seeing any magnetic field on the scales of the granulation?
We are seeing magnetic field on the scale of the granulation, but the point I'm going to try and make, which I haven't come to yet, is that the circulation does not occur close to the surface. That the magnetic field, which is produced at the surface, gets carried all the way down to the bottom of the convection zone before it comes back up again.
So suppose you cut the layer or the height of granulation, then you claim there's no dynamo, right? I'm trying to help clarify.
What I'm saying is that there's a small-scale dynamo which is producing fields, as I showed you, on the scale of granulation, but the circulation pattern involves the entire convection zone.
I think there's a putting in at the bottom, right?
What?
You're putting the field in at the bottom.
Well, not the same strength.
But field is also going out of the bottom.
But the field is imposed with a scale of whatever the thing is at the bottom.
The field is being imposed at the mesogranular scale.
Say that the dynamics, such as he understands it, is not localized. And therefore, the question of saying, is there a local dynamo there, is hard to answer, because it looks as if this geometry of this flows is that no matter what you do, they go locally.
But the first question
this is like what everybody has found.
Is there a surface dynamo? Yeah.
Everybody has found that the magnetic flux gets pumped down to the bottom of the convection zone. And that's what I'm saying is that's what happens here. And it gets recirculated from the bottom, but I will show you that's a somewhat different process.
But Bob, can you show first that this is a dynamo? Because it may be turbulent amplification. So like instead of one Gauss, you start out with 0.1 Gauss, you get the same result.
It's
so that would be convincing. But
linguistic.
We are running.
That's a very good point.
It is amplification.
It is amplification.
Yeah. Okay. So that was the first thing. The first thing.
That's what it isn't a dynamo in the conventional way of saying it. And we are running, as I said, now a case where we put in 30 Gauss instead of 1 Gauss, and we do expect to get a stronger field.
Have you run the case where you...
What do you mean, amplification? It will die eventually?
know. I mean, I suppose I understand, if I understand you correctly, right, if you put it a mean field, you have a large mm-hmm. scale field, you put it in a flow, you know that this thing is going to get amplified, V squared, the sort of norm of V is going to go up by some factor, which is RM dependent. Mm-hmm. And so the maximum field you get just is that. This is a factor that depends on RM and the geometry of the flow. If this were a dynamo, you get an exponential amplification which just kind of exceeds all bounds.
Right.
It doesn't depend on RM. Whatever you put in, it goes up exponentially.
In kinematic.
In kinematic. But just freeze this velocity. Just, you know, kill the Lorentz force and just let it be. And then ask your question, is this an exponential process that will amplify everything as much as you want? Or is it this one of these geometric ones? This is one of these geometric ones, such as it is. Mm-hmm. Because it keeps putting this stuff in. You would have to quit putting this stuff in.
How do you distinguish in nonlinear regime?
What?
Your exponential becomes constant, and that's it.
But I mean, the point is that let's do the linear stuff first. In that sense, I doubt that this is a dynamo just eyeballing it, because I don't think it has the magnetic Reynolds number high enough to be a dynamo.
But it has a very significant amplification, but you would still predict then that the final field up to values roughly like this would still be proportional to the initial, to the fields that you carry.
Right.
I think so, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think I think at the 30 Gauss thing, it'll reach a level at which it's being limited by the gas pressure, and so it'll be somewhat different. Yeah. And this was designed to sort of bracket what is probably...
Aren't you already somewhat in this limit here, 100 Gauss maximum fields?
That's still too small. This is an image of the vorticity, and again, what I wanted to show is that the vorticity is mostly in the downdrafts. You do get horizontal vortex tubes around the edges of the granules, but most of the vorticity has much more of a vertical structure. Which is again just another way of seeing that there's not a lot of local recirculation.
And all downdraft, like in the backstep, go the same direction.
What?
There is no downdraft.
No, there's no net helicity here. Downdrafts go in different directions.
Oh, you just plotted again. No signs.
There's no signs here.
No signs in your pictures.
But I've checked. That is, you can look to see what the whether there is any net helicity, and there isn't. There's no rotation. There's nothing that would introduce any particular.
It doesn't include helicity. Could be local, plus here, minus there.
It is. That's exactly what's going on. It's plus and minus in different places.
Okay, that's what you call.
So that you get very intense vortex tubes, but different ones are in different directions. So the other point is, in addition to there not being any local recirculation, or very little local recirculation, the magnetic field that is strengthened in these upper regions is going to be carried down to the bottom of the convection zone. And that's a result which a lot of people have found over the last decade. This is from Steve and Nix and I guess Yuri and Tom Clooney's paper, where they found that some flux went up, but that most of the flux got pumped down here to the bottom of the convection zone. Another way of seeing that, this is again another snapshot of the vorticity, and this is a movie of it, and you can see that stuff's being carried down. So this is just one of the downdrafts, and the surface here is about over there.
Looks like a Christmas tree.
So if the field gets carried down to the bottom, then, first place, the turnover time at the bottom is long compared to the surface. It's of the order of a month or so. And secondly, only a small fraction of the fluid that starts up from the bottom is ever going to reach the surface because of mass conservation. Now, that's different for the very strong flux, which you think gets detached from the toroidal thing that's involved with the tachocline, because there it's strong enough so that it's really buoyant. But these small scale fields are probably much more frozen into the fluid, so they're going to follow the fluid flow. And so, in fact, this is a picture from one of the non-magnetic, an old picture from an early non-magnetic simulation, and what it shows is that looking at fluid, it's this tracing fluid parcels in time. So these are fluid parcels that are at the surface and moving up at a given time. Where have they come from 9 minutes earlier? Where do they go 9 minutes later? And the point is that most of them have now gone down into these downdrafts, and the downdrafts are occupying a very small fraction of the area. Similarly, what comes up as the granules at the surface, the upflow velocities are fairly uniform, so they've come from nearly the same height, but again, from a much smaller fraction of the area because the flow is diverging. And we've actually traced fluid parcels, and although you can't actually get it at the bottom, this is the fraction of fluid parcels starting from any given density that managed to reach the surface. And it scales as the density to the minus 2/3 power.
But what happened to the rest? It returns back?
The rest turns back before it reaches the surface.
Is there some sort of a dimensional argument that you can use to derive that relationship?
Well, I think it's just the horizontal divergence. I mean, that's...
So basically, just looking at dip row E and looking at dip row bar.
I think it's just a 2D divergence.
And you said that's where the minus 2/3?
Yeah.
Okay. Can't read the.
I know you can't.
There.
I have to redo it with a with making it a lot bigger. But I wasn't thinking of how it was going to project when I made this.
But this is a sort of non integral is non-zero.
Integral of what?
If your histogram, your distribution has power or tail, right?
It has a long tail.
Long tail, so integral of this function.
This isn't a histogram.
This is
not a histogram.
Oh, this is not a histogram.
This is not a histogram.
I'm confused. You use the same word, fraction.
Oh,
sorry.
This is, if you look at fluid that's moving up at any given height, and then you say, you trace them in time from. These were from a sequence of snapshots where we save them 2 minutes apart, and so we can, it's close enough so we can actually follow the parcels in time, and we say, you know, how many of them actually make it up to the surface?
But see, the way he's defined rho z over rho naught is never going to be less than one, and that does converge.
Right.
The inner rho of that is one, as long as they intersect at 2/3.
And 2/3 because. Rho you took, rho is supposed to be exponential. How you get
this is not
is
no.
Is a function of rho. Or
this is a function of rho.
Of rho, but backward function of. Okay.
So, just to summarize, if the density contrast over the convection zone is something like 10^6, then only you have to start up 10^4 times before any given parcel of fluid is going to make it to the surface. And so that's why we say that the recirculation process is global and has a very long time scale. Mm-hmm. So it's a small scale dynamo. I think there really is a dynamo, but I think that the recirculation that you need is stuff that's going all the way down the bottom and then coming back up again, so it's going to have a very long time scale.
But how do you carry the heat from the bottom to the surface?
We're not simulating the whole...
But you have to take the heat, and you don't carry it with a plasma. Presumably this plasma goes back and gives heat to upper layer. How the heat
heat is transported? Well, the plasma at the bottom is being heated by the divergence of the radiator flux, right, and it's carrying that heat up. It doesn't make it all the way to the surface, but it makes it a little way up and before it turns over. Some of it makes it all the way up to the top.
That's why the phenomena is increasing upwards.
That's why what?
Why the superadiabaticity is increasing upwards to compensate for the less material.
Well, it's actually very nearly adiabatic. Yeah, there's a slight difference.
I mean,
at the bottom of the convection, at the bottom of the convection zone, actually, the entropy increases outward, so that you have a positive gradient because you're dumping energy in over a fair bit of distance.
My question is, we don't care about matter. Matter can stay at the bottom of the convection zone, but heat, you can't store heat.
But the heat is
because
being,
you
the
have
heat is being carried by the
engine,
matter.
And you have to get heat out.
But that's what convection is. Convection is the heat being carried by the matter.
Yeah, so
correct.
What I'm saying is, why don't it carry the magnetic field too?
It does carry magnetic field, but any given parcel of fluid only makes it up a little way before it turns over. Most fluid turns over within a density scale height in order to conserve mass.
Right. I mean, it's a bit like the kinetic energy flux, which goes down, of course, all the time. We all accept that. We all know that.
Yeah.
So it's not a puzzle.
But heat, meanwhile, goes up.
Yes, it goes up.
Like the flux goes down.
So that you create a sort of diffusivity which transport heat, even members of this convection don't go up.
So each element takes its entropy with it, because there is a very slight entropy gradient through the zone.
Mm-hmm.
Even though less and less mass flux is going up, it can carry the same heat flux, as I interpret it.
Learning solar physics.
So what we think is that it's better to talk, instead of talking about a surface dynamo, to talk of a small scale global dynamo. And because the velocities are larger at the surface where the scales are small, you're producing this field mostly on a granular length scale.
In one direction they're small, in the other direction they're big. Why you still need this? Why don't you drop also the word small?
Because the scale of the field that's being produced is of the scale of granulation. It's small.
In one direction, but in another direction it's stretched. You showed us cigars.
Okay. But what we see at the surface is a horizontal plane.
Well, in cut on the surface.
Okay.
What do you think sets the amplitude? What do you think sets the amplitude?
I expect it's the velocity amplitudes in the convection, which is determining how much, and the amount of vorticity, which is determining how much any given seed field gets amplified.
Do you mean what is the maximum value or what is the average value?
Hello.
Your question was like, do you want to know about the maximum value, the peak value, or the average value?
Well, I was just sort of ruminating about the question. What would be a good number to set for this incoming going magnetic field?
Oh, that I don't know.
And that would have to come from the base, and since the base has accumulated all this small scale stuff, it really has had plenty of time of canceling against each other. So you wondered how much of a net field would then be carried out. Is there anything?
I mean, if you do it for a closed box somehow, you just simplify your life, just close the box and try to figure out what's going on. Then the way it seems to work is that you have these two quantities, the maximum value and the average, say, energy. So a global thing. What happens is that the maximum value is almost determined entirely locally by a balance between, you know, tension and buoyancy, blah, 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 blah. And for all you can see, if you just take these laminar estimates that, you know, Nigel and company were deriving in the mid-80s, you know, they're just as well. I mean, they give roughly the right answer, meaning you cannot locally amplify anything past the equipartition times something that has to do with the
Prandtl number, magnetic Prandtl number, crap like that. So the maximum values are local. Then there's this question that, you know, given that this is like this convecting mess, how many of these objects can you pack into this box before, you know, before bad things happen? That's a very interesting and completely up for grabs question. It seems to have to do with the geometry of the flow. So, you know.
Well, it's now becoming a very difficult question because this picture says that you have to read, look at all the things happening all the way down.
That's right. It's like how much volume can you fill up by strong field before it really begins to kill the convection?
Well, what about this long time scale?
But it's a long time scale because, first place, you have the turnover time at the bottom of the convection zone, which is a month. But then it's a long time scale because any given piece of field may have to try to come up with something of the order of somewhere between 100 and 10,000 times before it's going to make it up into the region that we're simulating. So it's got to start up many, many times. So it's a very long time, somewhere between 100 and 10,000 months before it comes back up again to be amplified still more. So that's why I say it's a long time scale. But on the other hand, you're also going to get seed field contribution not just from this recirculation, but also from the dispersal of the flux from the active regions.
Which we don't observe.
We do observe.
The small scale field on the surface, it almost cycle independent, according to Karen.
And that's why. That's my point is that the time scale is much longer than the magnetic cycle, so you don't depend it. Don't expect it to depend on the magnetic cycle, but there will be a little bit of dependence because there's going to be some flux which is getting dispersed from the active regions.
From your source.
What?
It's a lot.
What is a lot?
A lot of flux. It takes solar activity. You have tons of active regions. They will give you tons of seeds.
No. Wait a second. What do you mean long time scale much greater than the magnetic? Magnetic cycle 22 years?
Yes.
You're crazy. How did you get that one? Where did that come from? Sorry, I didn't see it. That was the other
one. I think Bob is saying if you take 10 days, multiply it by 10 to the fourth.
Why multiply everything by 10?
Because most people are going to choose up to the surface.
Only one part in 10 to the fourth that starts up from the bottom and makes it to the top.
The correlation time for the largest scales is a month. So if anything gets organized, it would be on scales of months. That's it. End of story.
But that's the field that will stay down there. If you're interested in the field you see at the top, you have to really think about the question of how this material from the base that has been pumped makes it to the top.
Because if temperature takes up some sort of turbulent diffusion, the same way magnetic field will take up.
The overall transport of this thing is
there is no delay.
Like, you know, depth of the thing times about a month. That's it.
I don't think so.
Trust me on that one. There's no way you're going to get this thing to have a growth rate that is much, much. Either it's not.
I sign up with Catania.
But the pumping. Magnetic pumping.
I think the growth rate is very. I think it is a growth rate is very long.
There's one thing you have to know about magnetic pumping. And I think we can say this categorically is that, if you look at the average, on average, a certain amount of field remains down here. But it's a continuous recirculation of everything all the time. So there's always stuff going up and there's always stuff going down. And on average, there's more down here.
Right. And the time scale
so the stuff going up all the time is what I'm saying. So you can take stuff at the top always.
But
the time scale is the overturning time.
Yeah, but there is
but
no.
But only a very tiny fraction comes up.
It doesn't matter.
Another way of asking this question is, they're claiming you see more flux emerging on small scales than you see emerging over the whole solar cycle.
Right.
And it's just a matter of counting. How do you know, in simulations like this, you should be able to answer this question, how much of that is the same flux that's been recycled versus...
That can be interpreted as saying that everything has been saying is wrong, which could well be. There's a possibility.
There is actually
that is not true.
independently of the time scale, there's a big problem here. There are not many observers here, but I think if there were, they would point out right now that there are observations by the Hanley effect of this turbulent field.
Yes.
And these observations by Christoph Keller and company show that the flux density of this field varies a lot from one point to the next on right. the solar disk. And right. the scale of this variation is about 10,000 kilometers. So if this process were so global, as you say, it's hard to explain these relatively small-scale large variations.
I don't see that at all, because the amplifications you're getting is on a very small scale.
But you mean the scale if you is look the depth at, of the convective if, zone?
No.
Yeah, in these calculations were already...
If you looked at the pictures that I showed you of what the flux looked like, there's huge variations over a very small scale.
Yeah, but then why are these not smoothed out by the processing through the whole convective zone?
Because each time flux comes up, it's going to be amplified some more.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Seems to be somehow a product of this amplification process that it doesn't happen exclusively on the granule scale, that it organizes into the larger scales.
Well, and it is, right? You see the flux coming up everywhere, and then it gets swept by the flows to the into the network.
Yeah, but. Or you think that what you're seeing here, the fact that you see mesoscales appearing, has to do with, say, supergranular type of flows?
The time scale of these mesoscales is a couple of hours.
Right.
So how does this agree with long time scale that you propose here?
What you're seeing is that the flux comes up everywhere. And on the scale of hours, and it comes up in the intergranular lanes all over the place, not just anywhere. But on the scale of hours, it gets swept to the mesogranular boundaries.
There is no long time scale, that's it. Everything else makes sense, but the long time scale is just
that. I think there's a bit of confusion.
If you write the paper with that in it, pray that it doesn't come from you as a
reference. Bob has been mentioning the growth rate. I don't think the long time scale has to do with the growth rate. You're talking about a long time scale in a way that has to do with particles that move up
right.
and down.
Right. Right, but the field is attached to the particles.
How does this long time scale come out?
But it has nothing to do with the field.
Okay, the way it comes
field
out.
Field like temperature can move fast.
The things you've shown is what is the long times.
Well, there's an extrapolation.
It's an extrapolation because our simulations only go down to 2.5 meters.
But is this long time scale associated with some sort of Lagrangian history of the particles?
Yeah.
Is that going to ever manifest itself in any way we can observe?
I think it's the reason that you don't see a cycle dependence of the small scale flux emergence.
So, question, Bob. In order to quantify this question, whether or not one has an upper dynamo in the uppermost layers. I think we need to look at the work that one does against the Lorentz loss. The loss globally, the loss suffered against atomic losses,
yeah.
And of course the positive flux.
Right.
And then, if it's true that the dynamo is local, then that must mean that the amplification, that is the difference between generation and destruction, must be larger than the simultaneous loss by pointing flux downwards.
Mm-hmm.
Have you checked that?
I have looked at that, but only for one brief time period. In the middle of this run, and at that time, the difference between the work and the dissipation was larger than the pointing flux out.
Than
the pointing flux downwards by
that. So that I think would actually mean that the dynamo was actually still local.
Yeah, but. But I think this has to run for a while.
Could I ask about the long time scales and try to get it out of a theological discussion? If something happened and the solar cycle shut off for a period,
yeah.
How long before the quiet sun magnetic field would disappear?
We are running a simulation that might be able to answer that.
Okay. But that's the sense in which you say long time scale. You say it would take 100 years before you saw.
If it's a dynamo, then never.
Yeah. Let me.
Few years to answer to your question.
No, but I mean, do it the other way around. Take the sun, spin it down. It's not spinning, but it's convecting. Okay. There's no magnetic field. Then you put in a little bit. How long is it going to take before it gets all covered in crap? Does it ever get covered in crap? Or magnetic crap? According to you.
According
you would
to
say,
me, it takes
ooh,
we call it salt and pepper.
I would say 3 months.
Yeah.
So, what I think is that you're going to get these kinds of weak fields in less than 3 months.
Well, they're not
but
hold
on a second.
They're not weak. I mean, they're going to be at the top. They're going to be in
liquid
partition.
No, but hold on a second. But I think that that in order to get the field so that it can be amplified more than once, I think that's what's going to take a long time.
Let me just try one thing. We wrote this pumpkin paper, right? Which you've obviously read because you showed the picture. So we have a convection with a stable labella.
Right.
We put magnetic field in a stable labella.
You put it in the middle of the convection.
Some of them, and we put some of them in the stable labella, right?
Okay.
So we put all the papers in there. Right. Some of it's down there. It's not in the convection.
Right.
It's below the convection.
Right.
Okay. The reason we did that was because if you let that thing go, you'll end up with the same distribution of magnetic field pumped as you would have done in that. So it starts off with a delta function below the convection. It ends up with a distribution through the convection zone and with a peak below the convection.
And how long does it take?
A turnover time of two.
And
the thing is, it's not a static situation.
What was
your
density contrast across then?
25.
And so the square root of 25 is about a factor of 5. And so you're saying that
it takes a turnover time to distribute, a few turnovers to redistribute the magnetic field into this profile. And then it maintains that profile, not static.
So
this stuff stays up here, this stuff stays down here, but by redistributing it continuously, but with that profile.
I guess what I would say is that it would take about 10 turnover times in your case.
But that's dominated by the downflow, isn't it?
Yes, and that's what gives the shape, but you're forever recirculating magnetic field.
It's
dynamic. Maintaining that shape. It's dynamic.
If you can put down the magnetic field, I would say
it would take about 10 turnover times for that to happen.
Well, it's a few turnover times. We said 7, didn't we? It was 7 time years or something like that, which is, roughly good.
But
the sun has a much larger density contrast than either you or I have in our simulations.
Sure, I mean, at that density contrast, there's lots of little thin stuff on the top, right?
Yeah.
So I've got it 99% of the way through the convection zone. There's a little bit at the top which I'm missing maybe.
Well, the part that...
But it's hard to do that last little bit. It's really impossible to get
the part that we simulate is a factor of 100 in density. And there's another factor of 10 to the fourth in density below.
All right, take your calculation, do what we did, okay? Put magnetic field down the bottom, close the boundaries, and see how long it takes it to redistribute.
No, but
how long did it take for this field you put in the bottom to get redistributed by the convection to get to your study state?
This freezing in argument is basically not reliable.
Okay, you put the flux in the
I will try and answer. Okay. We can't do that for this calculation, but we've done other calculations where we didn't put any in the middle. We just fed it in from the bottom, and then it took about an hour.
An
hour for the flux to reach the top. It means between 1 and 2 hours, depending on how strong the field was that we put in the bottom.
Turnover time, as I said,
is somewhat less than an hour.
But
I think, isn't there an important difference here? Because up and down are different, and that's exactly the point in the whole topological pumping stuff. The downward pumping of the magnetic field goes much faster. Just like granular downdrafts go much, reach the bottom much faster than the material
what
coming up.
The shape of the distribution.
Yeah precisely. But we're not talking about the time scale. When we talk about the time scale, if you look at the time it takes for a particle that's moving down, to actually move down to over a certain distance, then that time scale is much shorter than an arbitrary particle starting at that place and moving up.
Okay, here's another calculation I've done, okay? You take one of these things.
That's a good point.
I think I should go back
and look at that. Just that way you don't have to close the box. You can actually just see how long it took stuff to come from the bottom to the top and over. And actually see what...
I think the answer would be a short one. I think the answer would be a short one. that it's an hour or something. Yeah. But I mean, the point that you're making, and I'm also not sure that is of any relevance, is that only a small part of this stuff from the bottom will actually make it to the top, which of course is true. The question is, as Dana was already alluding to, is that of any relevance, this question?
No, it isn't. No.
And I don't see the relevance at the moment. I think the really important question, if I wanted to answer this question, is what I just said about the funding cuts relative to the difference between generation and extraction.
Well, can I take you back to fundamental to theological questions? So you sort of claim extension of Kaolin theorem, there is no surface dynamo. This is a joke. but it could be sort of near surface dynamo still. If you suppose you increase your Reynolds number to the solar ones, which you didn't, what do you expect if your Reynolds number will go much higher than you use?
I don't know. I would expect that there would be a lot more very small scale recirculation, but not much more.
You still
on
insist
the scale at which
that you must go
scaling
down.
And that will contribute to the plan model, right?
Yeah.
And it will do it faster than the downdrafts can ever come in a way. Okay. That, I think, is to be answered in this question.
But the question is to some extent answered by the fact that the recirculation in the surface turns out to be very small. Most of it really goes down. So.
Yeah, but why is the pointing flux then relatively weak compared to the excess by which the work against the Lorentz force exceeds the ohmic losses?
So do you insist that this will survive large Reynolds number?
Yes.
Please write it into protocol.
I think I have to look at the time scale issue again, but I think that the rest of
okay.
What?
No, it's just the, I mean, this whole freezing in argument, if it were true, then the equilibrium distribution of the magnetic field would be exponential, like the density. Obviously it isn't, so the end result of that kind of pumping is a gradient which is much more modest. So that means that this kind of freezing in that a fluid element takes the flux with it all the way down doesn't work.
How do we know what the height distribution is?
Well, we know it from mean field theory. I think Open Orland is not here, so I can say this word. But we know it from those simulations too. So.
Which?
From which?
That Nick mentioned just now.
I think this is like we're. Life at these things is either impossible or easy, because these dynamos, if they have to operate a large magnetic Reynolds number, and you know, if it goes all the way through the convection zone, it better do that. Then they have no time scales. I mean, the only time scale these things have is related to the topological entropy of the flow. So either it is a dynamo or it isn't. If it is a dynamo, the only time it has is the turnover time, or a fraction thereof. But you're saying that by some miracle, and to do with the density, and to do with something, this fraction is a tiny, 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 tiny number. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't buy it.
Okay.
That's it. I mean, this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, like, because these things, they only have these two processes that are both locally mediated by the Lyapunov exponents, the bigger and the largest, and they're the same.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically, if this thing works as the difference of two exponentials, and you know, either one wins or it doesn't. But one cannot be a million times bigger than the other. One is just a little bit bigger than the other. That's why either it's not a dynamo, or if it's a dynamo, it's a growth rate of 1:1.
But your intuition, I think, is based on this kind of calculation which you have.
It's based on nothing. It's based on the
statistically,
it's based on
statistically steady. Let me finish. That's statistically steady turbulence in a certain box in which you can wait until it's come into a liquid equilibrium. There's nothing leaving the box, there's nothing coming back to the box. But the point that Bob is making here But that's not a good model here, because you can just see from the flow field that it's going to be
completed. I'm talking about the entire convection zone.
The whole thing is going down.
Yeah, I'm talking about the entire convection zone. I'm saying the circulation time of the entire convection zone is a month.
Right.
So I'm prepared to put up with a growth rate of nothing for a month.
But that depends on what you call the circulation time scale. If you start
for a month,
arbitrary particle at the base, and wait and measure on average how long it takes it for it makes it to the top. It's much longer.
I was just going by a month.
He doesn't need it.
The estimate of what everybody comes up with.
He doesn't need it.
The RMS velocity.
I think that's certainly true that the turnover time to lab is the order of a month.
That's the only time you have.
That's the circulation time scale.
Unless you can convince everybody that there's some amazing piece of geometry that brings in this inequality that makes it much bigger.
That's geometry. It's just a geometrical fact of expansion between the base and the surface.
Yeah, which is going on into the
planet. It's a million. Yeah. These numbers, you have to think about the consequences of these large numbers.
Well, then it's, either it's not a dynamo it's just so hard to believe that you're going to make these things have a topological entropy that is so much smaller than what it has to be. That's it.
And what do you mean, last thing?
Well, because, if this thing is circulating, if the velocity is going around every month, it's hard to believe that the local stretching and contraction and all of this crap can be so different.
Well, but you're
then the only number it has, it's once a month.
You're describing, say, sort of processes happening in the scale, like near the base. Because there is circulation, and it really turns over within most of the material makes it back down and back up in 1 month. But that does not hold for the material that makes it to the top.
If you have a recirculating flow with a turnover of a month, and that thing is a dynamo, it has a growth rate of a month. Or it doesn't have a
growth rate. Well, there could be. Maybe there's also a dynamo happening there at the base. Who knows?
I think this discussion has sort of
going
reached the saturation.
Yeah, let's try to get the next part of the talk.
Okay.
So we're running to Nick's talk.
Yeah. We have to lunch. Yeah.
So this is just a sequence of a few snapshots at 15-second intervals. And there's an example here of an emerging loop. And one over here, where the flux is going to be annihilated. So it goes from here to here. Where you see this is separating, and to here where this is coming together. And now something has happened to the flux here. We don't know what. And this is separated even more. And one of the things that we want to look at is to actually follow the field lines. In time to see what's really going on when it looks as if the flux at the surface is disappearing. And I just want to show you where I think that's happening. This is that same field line picture, and if you look over here, you can see that there's one of those serpent kinds of things, and I think that's where the flux is disappearing. And so one of the things that I want to do is to actually go back and recalculate and save these things at very small time intervals and follow particular field lines in time to see what's happening to them.
What?
How else are you going to tell what happens when you see the flux disappear?
Well, that's the thing. Let's suppose that this is a fast process. It may or may not be a dynamo, but it's a fast process. Then it's dissipative, and lines don't really have much of an identity. You know what I mean. At any given second, you can always plot the integral lines of these vector fields, but the lines themselves don't live that long.
Mm-hmm. No, but this is relevant for the observations.
What?
The observations. Where you see where the behavior of the small scale field has particular characteristics, you would like to see a cumulative comparison.
I would.
Forget about me.
I could see that happening.
How do you know it's the same field?
That's the thing.
What I was planning on doing was, you can make one snapshot like this, and then along each field line, you find a place where the field strength is a maximum. You do the E cross B over B squared motion for the field line, and that's your starting point for a new field line, which you then integrate at the next snapshot. Right.
So you follow up from the bottom to the top?
Yeah. No, just from the point wherever, it can be starting from any arbitrary point, you go in both directions.
Okay, so it's Lagrangian exercise. Why don't let him go?
I mean, you may be right. Yeah. Maybe
it's not enough information to talk about, but it's your problem.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, but I mean, what time and stuff.
But my hope was if you had enough time resolution, you'd be able to
continuously.
When the field lines reconnect, then you don't know which line is which. But if you have enough time resolution, you should be able to see what's going on up to the point where that occurs. I don't know how else to get at finding out what's happening. I mean, so the field may be being pulled below the surface, in which case you'll see it because it's not dissipated. It may be that it's reconnection, in which case you should see field lines coming together, even if you then can't follow them past that point. It may be that something is in fact being fragmented, so the field becomes too weak to see. You should then be able to see the things moving apart. So you should be able to tell something about what's going on. But I quite agree. If it happens to be a reconnection thing, you can only go up to that point and then poof, it's not defined. Okay, just very briefly, we ran one other case where we put in a vertical field, a vertical background field. And in this case, we put in a 400 Gauss uniform vertical field. The reason for, even though that's somewhat high for a plage region, we put it in because we wanted to have enough flux so that it would accumulate in some places to make micropores. And so this is a picture of the intensity. The black contours are contours of magnetic field strength at half kilogauss intervals, and the red lines are the zero velocity contours that just outline the edges of the granules. And the color is the emergent intensity, and there's a little micropore. And we also then calculated what the Stokes profiles look like on this line cutting across the micropore.
You initially put the field in every layer.
What?
You initially put the field in every layer, basically, and just
right.
It's like flux expulsion.
What?
It's flux expulsion.
Yes, exactly. It's flux expulsion to begin with, but then of course it gets mushed around in the intergranular lanes, and so there are some places where it tends to concentrate enough so that you get a micropore forming.
This is like flux separation, say,
nitrogen. Yeah, right. That's exactly it. It's not a. This is not a dynamo contribution. Sure.
Is there convective collapse?
Show you. Now, but I'll get to that in a moment. The top picture. These are both horizontal slices at the surface with time increasing upward. And the bottom one is the intensity, and the top one is the magnetic field strength. And so this is where red is the dark. This is where the micropore forms. And you can see that the magnetic field is actually not maximal where the micropore has formed. It's concentrated in around this, and what's really happening is that there was a little granule there that you can see here. This is the intensity, this is the magnetic field, and this is the magnetic field with a mask so that you only see it where it's strong and it's dark. So here's this little granule which has gotten squeezed out of existence and becomes the micropore. initially the field is strong around the edge of that granule, as we would expect. When the granule disappears, the field then gets squeezed into the middle. So eventually the strong field ends up in the middle, but it doesn't start off like that. And you actually get the, you can see actually here that it's strongest in these corners over there at the edges of the incoming intergranule lanes, even after the micropore is formed. And up here you can see that it starts off as a ring and then it gradually gets moved into the center. So that we weren't expecting that, but we see lots of examples of this typical way of forming the micropores. Now, to come to your question about collapse. Here, this just happened that these things lined up. Here in the center is one of the micropores that has formed. Here on the two sides you have weaker situations. This is this is an image of the magnetic field strength and contours of the density, and this is the tau equal 1 contour, this colored one. So you can see here it's evacuated. In these weaker ones, they are in the process of evacuating, starting at the top, but down below the surface, they're actually, the mass is actually piling up still at the moment. And eventually they do get evacuated, but that's how it starts. And now this is a similar kind of thing with the temperature. So again, the tau equal one and the temperature contours are really depressed. And one of the things that I find interesting, I think that has to be looked into much more. Here it's dark because the tau equal one contour right at the bottom is above the temperature contour that it's been following most of the way down, so it's cooler. But here, the tau equal 1 contours and the temperature contours follow very closely because it's H minus opacity, which is very temperature sensitive. And so one of the things we really need to look at is why do these magnetic concentrations look bright in the G band? And that might well have to do with the CH molecule chemistry.
You mean pores look bright in G band?
No, I'm talking about bright points.
G-band bright points.
G-band bright points.
Looks bright in G-band.
But what bright point has to do with pores?
This is a micropore, but you also see bright points. You see both bright, on the sun, you see both bright points and dark spots.
Yes, but...
And one of the things we'd like to find out is why they are different.
But it has nothing to do with micropores.
Well, they both have to do with flux concentrations.
Are you relating them? That's what my question. I'm surprised. I've never heard that micropores and bright points are somehow related.
They're related in the sense they're both flux concentrations. So, for instance, here, you can see that the tau equal 1 surface falls a little bit below the temperature contour that it was following up here. So this thing will look slightly bright. Here, it seems to follow exactly along the temperature contour. Here it comes above it, so this one looks dark. What's making all these differences? I don't know, but it's but the field is clearly much stronger here than it is in either of those. The field here is of the same strength as the field is up there.
It'd be interesting if you could do some kind of a statistical plot of magnetic flux and apparent brightness.
We see very few bright points in the continuum. Of course, we don't have CH. I mean, we don't have a G-band. So, but Han Utenbrock did look at one of these snapshots, and what he said is that he didn't see any G-band bright points, although if you look at the ratio of G-band to continuum, there's lots of them.
Bob, can you clarify, where is the position of the granular cell relative to bright points?
Well. This is a granule, and that's another granule, and that's probably an intergranule lane.
So they sit into intergranule lane.
These, yeah, magnetic field sits in the intergranule lanes. Okay, we all know that. Okay, I think that's the end. Yeah.